It's December, and that means party season is in full swing. Holiday parties are supposed to be fun, occasions for good cheer and goodwill to all, but it doesn't always work that way. Whether it's the obligatory office party or the family Christmas gathering, there's a host of party pitfalls to navigate. How do you stay cool as your hostile mother-in-law criticizes everything from the eggnog to the table setting? Or how do you gracefully retreat from one of those polite but uncomfortable conversations with the boss? And don't forget the lecherous guest or the guest who's had too much to drink but doesn't know it. Today, we've invited some experts to help us survive the season. Comedian Amy Sedaris has just written a book on the art of hostessing. Steve Kleinnedler, an editor at the American Heritage Dictionary, has some advice on how to sound smart at your next event. And advice columnist Amy Dickinson gives us the lowdown on mingling. Later this hour, a massive search and rescue effort is underway in Oregon. We'll talk about how these searches are conducted and what hikers and climbers should do if they get lost. But first, surviving the holiday party. Are you in the midst of planning a party or getting geared up to attend one? What's your holiday dilemma? Give us a call. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is talk@npr.org. Ah, there's my first guest now. Why, it's Amy Sedaris. And you know she's the talk of the town these days. She has a new book out called I Like You, Hospitality Under the Influence. And she's joining our little soiree from the New York Bureau. So glad to have you here today, Amy.
Thanks for having me, Lynn. I like that doorbell.
You like
mine's
that?
Like, mine's really annoying. You're like, oh, who could it be? I'm not here. Don't pick it up. Wow. Search and rescue. I like following that. If you get a coffee can and you stick a whole candle in it, that'll provide warmth.
Okay.
So when you're traveling, I suggest having a can of coffee, empty can of coffee in your car and a big old candle.
Okay.
That's my tip. Okay.
Thanks. Okay. You're not leaving now, are you?
Cause,
that's
you
know,
it. Bye-bye.
Be really sad for my first guest to go right away. Are you throwing any parties this holiday season, by the way?
I'm never throwing another party again in my life after this book. People have high expectations now. But it does allow me to actually be slack. Because when you do throw a lot of parties or you are that person, then you can just be lazy. Because you're like, hey, I've had you over how many times? You know, so I didn't bring anything. So.
You know, there's a party pitfall that most of us won't have to face, that we've written a book about it and therefore are going to be judged on the basis of what we've written.
Yeah, therefore I'm really going to be bad at it. So I'll give them something to talk about. Can you believe her? You know, I'm missing some change. I'm going to get a bad reputation.
What do you think makes a really good party, though?
It really is who you invite, I think. It's you know, I refer to it in my book as casting a party, you know, because you want the right combination of people. And the more you're prepared is always better. You know, I mean, you're going to have surprises that, you know, you weren't expecting. So the more you're prepared, the better.
What about, like, during holiday seasons, people tend to have big parties as opposed to sort of small, intimate parties?
Fools. They're fools. I know. Well, that's a different thing, too, like the big office party, which I don't really have to – I don't deal with, you know, that kind of situation where you've got all kinds of characters. And you do have to worry about keeping the ball up in the air as far as conversation, or if you do get stuck with the boar or the person who's making a beard out of the cheese dip you just made. And, you know, all kinds – it's like a jungle, those office parties. I'd love to talk to somebody who has to go to one of those.
Well, we have someone who wants to join this little party on the line, wants to ask you a question. So
Let
me see if I can ring that person up here. Heather in Kansas City. Hi, Heather.
Hi.
Hey, Heather.
I'm actually going to a party tonight. I'm getting ready.
Wow.
Yes. And
you're where right now? At the airport?
No, I'm at home getting ready for the party.
Okay, don't have to yell. Okay, Heather, I'm just kidding. Okay.
Anyways, they are, he works for the city, and we're going to the mayor's Christmas party tonight, but we're Mormon and we don't drink, and we don't know how to handle everybody pushing drinks in our face.
Oh.
Exactly. Politely, you know.
Right.
So it's like, oh, you know, here, have this. And we've dealt with this at weddings and stuff, and people always think we're rude, and it's just...
Isn't that terrible when they do that? I write about that in my book, too. Like, stop saying, you know, pushing it on them. It's so rude. I think that's more of a problem for the host. Everyone, that's such a rude thing. Like, you don't want to... knock someone off the wagon serving a tiramisu or something. I know you're Mormon. It's not an AA thing. But if you were an AA, I'd wear all the chips around my neck and make a necklace out of it. Being a Mormon, is there any kind of jewelry that says, hello, I'm a Mormon? Just wear it on your name tag. I don't know.
I'd have a sweatshirt and I'd be fine. But
there you go.
So I'm just curious, Heather, do people just not politely take your no thank you at face value and stop?
It depends on whether or not, if they know my husband, and a lot of people who know my husband and know that we're Mormon push us just because it's almost like they want to see you break.
That's awful.
It is, but a lot of people do that. We've had that problem with a lot of his friends from high school and stuff at weddings. But a lot of the time, they just think that we're trying to, like, say that we're better than them or, you know, hey, you shouldn't do it, and we don't do it because it's wrong or something, and so you shouldn't do it. But it's not about that. It's just that we just don't, and we don't want to be rude. We're actually trying to avoid the whole social hour thing from 6 to 7 and just go to the dinner, just so we don't have to deal with all the drinks.
Why don't you do that, then? Why don't you?
That's what we're going to do, but hopefully, I don't know, for future reference, is there anything you would recommend?
I just think that's rude. I mean, you'll just kind of get tired of them. Just say, keep saying no thank you, no thank you, no thank you. I mean, what else can you possibly do? I mean, I can't imagine what else you could do. I mean, without making a huge announcement or, you know, excuse me, is this on? Check, check, check. Listen, there's some Mormons in the building. We'd appreciate it. I mean, what else can you do?
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call, Heather.
Bye.
I'll get it.
Oh, God, okay.
Hello.
There's another guest.
You're 15 minutes early. What are you doing here?
This is Stephen Kleinedler, I think. Is that Stephen Kleinedler?
That's it.
Oh.
Family name. Hi, Stephen.
Good to have you.
Hi, Amy. Hi, Lynn.
Now, Stephen is the editor of 100 Words to Make You Sound Smart and the American Heritage Dictionary, and he joins us from member station WBUR in Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to our party.
Thank you very much for having
me. How do you write a book? That's amazing. I can't. So you're going to give some examples.
He's going to tell us about how to be smart at a party, I think, right?
Okay.
I should point out I'm one of several authors who worked on this book. The whole editorial staff here at the Dictionary compiled this. It's not my sole effort. Basically, what I would say at a party, if you want to sound smart, I don't have, you know, like one or two or three words that you would want to say and slip into the conversation. More importantly, it's better to have a wide arsenal in your vocabulary so you can say the appropriate word at the appropriate time, because using a highfalutin word incorrectly is kind of the linguistic equivalent of having lettuce in your teeth.
Yeah,
right.
That's
you want
the
some
worst
more
adjust
sauce. Right.
So the if you're not the type who sits at home at night and thumbs through the dictionary, I realize there aren't that many people out there. We have these little handy books such as 100 Words to Make You Sound Smart or 100 Words Every Word Lover Should Know that kind of does the browsing for you. It takes 100 words from the dictionaries, kind of related around a thematic theme, and by browsing through those, you can learn about great words like Svengali or simple words like glib or gregarious. And these are words that many people are probably familiar with, but might not know exactly what they mean. And, we don't want anyone to use it in the wrong context. So this will help them get a context for how they can best use them.
But maybe you can give us a couple of words that, simple words like glib, I think probably would be a better example that we could just throw into a conversation glibly, as it were, to make ourselves sound like we really know what we're talking about.
Use it in a sentence, please.
Absolutely. The beauty thing about glib is it's got two senses, one meaning just that it's performed naturally, kind of offhandedly, and then there's a second sense that kind of throws in a little negative overtone that indicates that you think the person being glib is being superficial or, being deceitful. Matt Lauer and Tom Cruise brought this word to the forefront with their famous interview sometime earlier this year. And if you accuse someone of being glib, you're just indicating that you think they're speaking perhaps a little too smoothly. So for example, if you were at a party and you were commenting on someone else across the room, I think George over there sipping the champagne is a little bit too glib tonight. You might be indicating that you think he's like putting on some airs, by the way, that he speaks. And yet, you yourself aren't coming off that way because it's a nice, simple, short word, and you're using it appropriately in context.
So he's like a producer. Like a producer's might be kind of slick. So
absolutely.
He might be producer over there and be like, they're glib.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you're at a party where there are theater people, you're going to find a lot of glib people.
Glib agency hold, please. This she.
Exactly.
Amy, how important is that to you to sound smart at a party? Or do you even think about that?
Yeah, that's when I leave a conversation. If I hear so many people speaking with words, I'm just like, excuse me, that's the doorbell. I have to go. I don't even, I just don't think that way. You know what I mean? I never, because then I always think they're going to see through it.
All right, let's see. I think we have some people holding on who want to join us. Megan in Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Megan.
Hi. My comment was that my father basically deals with the holidays by completely hiding from any family member or friend.
He doesn't go to any parties then, huh?
No. When we were kids, he would kind of placate us, and we thought he enjoyed it until we got older and realized he absolutely hates it.
And so do you leave him alone and let him do his thing, or do you guys try to, you know, coax him out of the basement with a chicken wing or something? Do you try to get him involved, or do you just let him be?
We let him be. There's basically no way to make him come to anything.
Okay.
Well, so parties go on and he just doesn't come at all?
Yeah, when we were younger, we kind of wondered why he just sat there and didn't really talk that much and had a very fake smile on his face. And now we understand why. He just hates it.
So yeah, a lot of people just aren't social like that. That's good that you know you can just leave them alone. That's the best thing to do.
I think so. My sister has a hard time with it, but I have no problem with it.
All right, Megan, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Yeah, better not to go, huh? Than
I think so.
You think so? Just stay home if you really don't like these parties.
Yeah, if you're not going to contribute to the party, then stay home. I mean, then what are you going to go to the party and complain? Say, I'm really not up to it. I don't feel good. And just complain all night. You'll just ruin the party. You know, you'll bring it down. So I think it'd be best just to stay at home.
Do you have any clever ways, either one of you, Amy or Steve, of getting out of a conversation with somebody at a party? You know, sometimes you get stuck in a conversation with somebody and you just don't know what to do or how to get away from them. Do you have any clever ways?
I make it obvious. I go, Carol! And like, they won't see anybody. I'll be like, I'm sorry. Carol needs me. And I just make it obvious.
I agree with the last thing that they said, and then I find an excuse to slip out of the conversation.
Like, because, I couldn't have said that any better. Cheese ball.
If you're stuck in a conversation where you're not that into it, chances are they just want to be affirmed anyway. So, yes, you're right. Okay, bye.
All right. We are going to have to take a short break now, but we're going to come back and continue our conversation and our party here at Talk of the Nation. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Well, you may think it's cold and flu season, but it's not. It's party season. And we're giving you all the goods on how to conduct yourself with your family, your office mates, and any other get-togethers you may find yourself attending this year. At our party already is Amy Sedaris. Her new book is called I Like You, Hospitality Under the Influence. Also, Steve Kleinedler. He is one of the editors of 100 Words to Make You Sound Smart. We've got him on to tell us how to be smart at a party, and we invite you to stop by if you're an anxious hostess or a socially nervous partygoer. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-989-8255, and you can send us an email to talk@npr.org. Oh, it's another guest. Oh, who's there? Oh, it's Amy Dickinson. Amy writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune, and she is joining us from the Chicago Bureau.
Awful. Is it always so bad around here?
It is. I live in a shifty area of town.
Oh,
so it's
my
very
gosh.
Bad. Yeah.
Lynn, I love your sweater. It's fantastic. Oh, it's great. You know,
I love sleeveless turtlenecks. It does look
good.
Oh,
it's fantastic. Yeah. Now, who's this?
Amy Sedaris. We have Amy Sedaris here and Steve Kleinedler.
Oh, hi, Steve.
And
I've
Amy,
never
we're
going
to ask you to please watch your language in the future.
Hi, Amy.
Amy Sedaris.
I understand.
Thanks
I was being
very
glib.
Much. Amy Dickinson, since you are the advice columnist in the group, I want to ask you, first of all, we said you came fashionably late. Can you tell us, like, when do you cross that line from fashionably late to rudely late?
Well, can I tell you, I'm the worst, and this is why. I tend to arrive places early, and then I circle and circle and circle, and I feel like I have to wait until 15 minutes after the stated beginning of the party, because that's sort of, you know, when it is the very earliest you can arrive is 15 after 6, you know. But I think that, for instance, my office holiday party is this Saturday, and it's between 6 and 8, and I will probably get there at, 6:30. I think showing up at a cocktail party at 7:45 is pretty bad. That means you really don't want to mingle with your colleagues.
Yes, I think that's pretty bad, too. You just wanted to make an appearance.
Right.
And Amy Sidars, as a hostess, when somebody comes really late, let's say you're having a dinner party, I mean, how do you react? I mean, do you react coolly or do you let them know you're sort of irritated?
No, that late, it really doesn't bother me. It's too early that bothers me. You know, I'll go ahead and people who know me, we'll be eating. I mean, I'm not going to wait for you. You know, maybe I'll give it 15 minutes. If you're not there, I'll still serve dinner.
Amy,
and then
I completely agree. You really shouldn't. I get a lot of letters about this. There's no reason to wait. If you're going to eat at a certain time, go ahead and eat.
Yes, and I don't make them feel bad. Again, he's like, I'll pull up a chair. I mean, then it's still something to talk about. You know, I hate it if the food's cold, but, you know, you just make fun of it. But, yeah, if it's early, it can be a nightmare.
Now, if any of our listeners need some advice to get through the party season, give us a call. The number is 800-989-8255. And we are going to ask Kate in Kansas City to join our party now. Hi, Kate.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, Kate.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I'm worried about Christmas because this past Thanksgiving, we had our whole family over for dinner. There were 34 people. And my mom and my mother-in-law got into an argument about the turkey. And it was a bad deal. And I'm really not sure how to handle it because I'm just nervous about letting them both help me. We always have a Christmas morning brunch where people come, and I don't know. I mean,
What was the argument about?
Well, my mom made the turkey, and that's a big deal. And she called my mother-in-law for help with carving the turkey. But by the time she got over here with the turkey, she'd already carved part of it, which really ticked my mother-in-law off. And I don't even really know why that was such a big deal, but they got into an argument, and they both got to my house early, I was in a T-shirt or something. And so by the time I came back downstairs, my mom was leaving the house in tears, and then my husband told my mother-in-law to quit talking about it, and then they ended up going out in the front yard, and they made up, apparently. But
Have you guys not talked about this since then?
We haven't talked about it at all. I mean,
Amy Dickinson, I think you should
enter.
Can I
weigh in?
Yeah,
yes.
That's one for the Amys.
Okay, first of all, clean slate, okay? Just wipe it clean. Secondly, with a group that large, actually, if you're having another large group this Christmas, it's some basic party management techniques can come in handy in that you do some thoughtful seating. You might want to seat them pretty far apart. Let them find each other and warm up to each other, but don't throw them together. Don't expect people to apologize in front of other people, and give each of them separate jobs. I think especially with moms and mother-in-laws, you give them each a sort of important job, and you say, you know, Mom, can you help me get all of the salads together this year? And then you ask your mother-in-law, I would love it if you would help me with dessert. Do you have a special dessert you'd like to make? You know, you just really give them specific jobs.
Amy, could I just add one thing? In this case, I would say make sure that one of the jobs is not carving the turkey.
Yes. Yeah. Knives. Right. You don't want these women around knives, really.
Right. But you do need to always assign a carver. You know, if you don't know how to carve your meat, it's always good to assign somebody that job ahead of time. So that was a smart thing to think about.
And My solution, too, is
take Xanax if anyone's that stressed out.
I just love the idea of giving some people jobs. These women did everything wrong. They arrived early. They had an argument. You know, the burden, I can tell, you feel the burden is on you, but they have both behaved quite badly. So just assume that they will get it together and keep it together.
And people love getting jobs, and especially if someone has, like, bad skin or they're self-conscious about something, those are the best people to give jobs to, because otherwise they're just going to sit on the couch and think about all their problems. So if you give them an important job, then they'll stop thinking about themselves and their bad skin.
You know, another thing I love for men who sometimes feel out of place at holiday meals, big meals, deep frying the turkey out in the driveway, this is something that men love to do. So you might want to think about that.
And you know what? Bathtub.
It could end in a fireball, which is fun for everyone.
Right.
Thanks for your call, Kate.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a call now from Chris, and Chris is calling from Portland, Oregon. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was calling, you know, your intro had this sort of question of, you know, how do you get away from the bore at the party? And my problem is kind of the other way around. I'm sort of concerned about how do I avoid being the bore.
Bores don't know they're bores.
Just for some context, I'm an academic, so it's a kind of occupational hazard. And I'm in a field of African history, which is kind of, at the surface, kind of pretty interesting in a way. It's different often, but it's also something people don't know much about. So, well, and often people have pretty strange ideas as well. So there are a lot of ways to go wrong.
Well, I think that if you are talking to them at a party and, you know, be it attentive of the warning signs, are their eyes glazing over? Are their eyes not looking at you? Are they looking over at the dip? Are they looking over at the drinks? And just because you're passionate about a conversation or a subject doesn't necessarily mean they are too. But more importantly, again, it comes back to the words. If there are certain words that are specific to your field that just aren't well known, a lot of times they might not even be following what you're saying, even though you think they should or do. And I'm not saying you have to stick to the weather or the latest scores of whatever game you happen to be watching, or it's an art of small talk, which is a completely different thing about an in-depth analysis of what you do on a day-to-day basis. And parties, you know, let's face it, a lot of it is small talk.
Well, let's give Chris some advice about small talk, because this is a skill that some people have and others don't. So for those who feel uncomfortable with the whole idea of small talk, what do they do? How do they get small talk going?
Well, I would say if you're not comfortable with getting small talk going, the next part of your act, practice going, you know, being part of a group of three or four people talking, and be a listener. Try being a listener for 5 minutes without saying anything. A lot of people who are uncomfortable with small talk feel like they have to fill the gaps of silence with words and just keep going and going, where if you sat back and, like, listen to what other people have to say, then it'll come to you at an appropriate point. You'll know how to fit in and say what to say, because you'll be responding to someone rather than initiating, and that might be just a different way of approaching it.
All right.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. And also, it goes back to casting. If I know that you're going to be there and you're going to talk about African artifacts, then chances are I'd probably invite somebody to my party who would be like a curious person who would probably enjoy talking to you. So if you were on my invite list, I would make sure there was someone there who'd be fascinated by you.
All right, Chris, so you need to find a friend who's a hostess like Amy Sedaris, okay?
Thanks a lot.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. All right. I have some emails here as well. This is from Michael. I'm not sure who it's from, but I have an office party to go to this weekend. It is a small office, and each year the business owner's husband always feels an obligation to express his extreme political views. It's all I can do not to punch him in the face.
Oh.
How do I handle this situation? Whatever happened to not discussing politics or religion in mixed company? And this is from Kelly. And Kelly says, your doorbell is driving my dog nuts.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, that's too bad. I guess I'd punch him in the face.
Yeah, punching.
Yeah, punching.
But you know what? This is somebody who also, this is like the side version of the small talk thing, is how to change the subject.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, with some people, it can't be done, and you have to find a way to avoid them. But you can always just listen, and then when there's a break, you can say, oh, how about them Bears? Can you believe it? You know, you just really change it. Change the subject.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's get Craig. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, and ideally that if you did change the subject, the other person would pick up on the fact that you're trying to change the subject. But of course,
right,
these types of people don't always pick up on
right.
that.
Or disagree with everything he has to say, and then he won't know what else to do. Like, you know, maybe he's trying to start something. So just say, you're absolutely right. We could not agree with you more.
Okay. Yeah, it's a great idea.
All right, let's go to Craig in Cleveland. Hi, Craig.
Hi.
Hey, Craig.
My question is for Amy. First of all, thank you for taking my call, and I'm an absolutely huge fan. Absolutely fabulous book. I bought it, and we're putting up the picture inside the dust cover as our pinup in our kitchen.
Oh.
I do have a question for you. I was curious about theme parties. We have a lot of theme parties at my house, and I was curious as to What can you do to encourage people to participate in the theme of a party?
Well, I'm not a big theme and gimmick person. I just did that for all the chapters because I thought it would be challenging situations. I don't like it when I go to someone's house and there's a game involved and they want everyone to, you know, that's hard for me too. So I understand that. But usually if I'm having like Thanksgiving and I have pilgrim hats or Indian hats for everybody to wear, usually it's the people I invite. I know they're going to wear those hats. But I know that's a tough situation. Again, that goes with who you invite. But yeah, I know that's always hard, especially when they want you to get up off the floor and stand up and play charades or something like that. I just get so embarrassed.
You know, I once lived in a group house where we had an argument. The group had a disagreement over whether we were going to have a costume party or not, and one person wanted to have the costume party and the rest of us didn't. And so that person's friends, sadly for them, came in costumes. and nobody else did.
Oh, no. See, it's got to be either commit or not. It's got to be everybody, or that's not fair.
And the poor people were so embarrassed. Oh. Thanks so much for calling, Greg.
Thank you.
Okay.
I once went to a party, which I thought was a disco party, so I was dressed up in 70s outfit. Oh. And then I found out later it was a div school party.
For the
Divinity School? Yes.
No way.
At the University of Chicago.
Oh, no.
Did anyone even notice that you were dressed up, Steve?
They thought it was surprisingly not that off, but it was still embarrassing.
I bet you didn't go home alone that night.
I didn't.
All right, we're going to take a call now from Mary in Denver, Colorado. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, Mary.
My husband and I are not very popular, so one year we decided we were each going to memorize 10 jokes. And we were the hit. It was wonderful. Of course, we didn't get asked the next year because everybody knew the jokes. But if you wanted to hear a real quick joke, I told the gal, I think it's an okay joke, but it is about deaf mute. So I don't know if you want to hear it or not.
Well, we'd like to hear at least one of those 10 jokes. Yeah.
Okay. There's about a busload of about 50 deaf mutes, and they're all traveling across the country. And the bus driver, and he's the one that knows how to speak. They're all signing with their hands, oh, my gosh, we're really hungry and thirsty. Can you stop? And he sees this bar up ahead, and he says, I'm going to check and see if it's okay. So he goes in, and he tells these people, I have about 50 deaf mutes. Is it okay if I bring them in? And they say, sure, we love them. They're really easy customers. So they all go in, and he's going, oh, wait a minute. Before you start taking their orders, you need to know when they motion to their mouth, that means they're thirsty. If they motion to their hand, that means they're hungry. So all of them come in, and they're just motioning to their hands, motioning to their mouth, and they're having a wonderful time. And all of a sudden, there's like two people in the corner, and their mouths are wide open, and they're staring at the ceiling. And somebody's going, bartender's going, that's kind of strange, but oh, well, I'll just keep serving up this beer and these hamburgers. So he keeps doing it, and then he looks over, and he goes, oh, my gosh, there's like 10 of them over there. What is the deal? What's going on? And here they are. They're just staring at the ceiling with their mouths open. And he's kind of getting worried. But then he really gets worried because half of them, 25 of them, staring up at the ceiling, mouth open. He goes over to the bus driver and he goes, I'm really panicked. I see these 25 people over here and their mouths are open. And the bus driver looks and he goes, oh, doggone it, they've started to sing. I'm never going to get them out of here.
Oh, gosh.
But anyway, that was one of our jokes and we were the hit. And then we went to finally getting off of good books, and a good book for a party is called Geek Love, and it's quite the little thriller.
All right, so I've read Geek Love.
So, I'm shocked. I'm shocked after that joke that you weren't asked back. That's really, really surprising.
Maybe your audience were deaf mutes.
Yeah. And you know what? But this brings up a really good point. Jokes, not so much. I don't think that a guest's job is to entertain other guests.
Yeah.
So a guest's job is really to get to know other guests and, you know, to be entertaining, but not to do an act. I don't know.
All right. Thanks for your call, Mary. Yeah, thanks so much for calling, Mary. But you know what? The best advice that we've heard so far in terms of this, guests don't have to be entertainers, it's listening, isn't it?
I mean,
listening is really what we're talking about here.
And asking, you know, the African expert who's worried that he's boring, one way to check yourself is to ask a question and make sure you listen to the entire answer, and then maybe ask another question. You know, let the conversation go where the other person leads it.
Like, why are you yawning?
Right.
Now that's a non-starter. Yeah. All right. Well, I wish I could invite all of you to my next party.
Really,
it's
Lynn?
Been fun. Yeah, absolutely.
It would be fun.
And Amy Sedaris, I'll be in your cast anytime.
Oh wow! Okay, fantastic.
All right. Thanks to all of you for
thank you for coming today.
Amy Sedaris is the author of "I Like You: Hospitality Under the Influence." Steve Kleinnedler is one of the editors of 100 Words to Make You Sound Smart. And Amy Dickinson writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.